Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Democrats did well in North Carolina in this last election. They took most of the top jobs at the state level and even broke the GOP supermajority in the General Assembly. But they met with disaster nationally. Our city's Democratic mayor, Vi Lyles, is with us this hour, and we'll spend some time getting her take on just what happened to her party and why the nation rejected their candidates and their message. But we'll get into some other things as well, including how and when the city will use the bond money that voters said yes to on Election Day, and what that money will do for us, plus her take on the council's trip to Munich last week and more. Mayor Lyles, good morning. Welcome back. Unmute yourself, Mayor.
Good morning to all of your listeners.
Good morning. It appears that nationally, the Democrats lost the whole enchilada. I'm curious about what your take. We've heard all the pundits. What's your take on what happened?
You know, I don't know that I have any more to say than what's been said over the last past week. It's been almost impossible to turn on radio to then just hear what people think and what they're doing. I believe that in many ways, there's going to be a need for people to step back and take some time and not jump in right away to be able to say, this is what happened. But we do know that unaffiliated voters in Mecklenburg County are significant, actually even more than the Democratic Party has. And so why is that happening and what's going on with it? I've heard a lot of conversation around the idea of, well, you know, we didn't support democratically the vice president, but we actually did support her, but that wasn't enough to carry her across even our boundaries as well as our county.
Mecklenburg County did vote for Vice President Harris in this election, and right. the number of independents not only eclipses Democrats, but it also eclipses the number of Republicans as well in the state. North Carolina and several other toss-up states were the key, we were told, prior to the election to winning this to winning the Electoral College, all of which were projected to be close. They were not. How surprised were That's you? Right. I'm assuming that you have some sort of inside track. How surprised were you?
Well, that's a big assumption. I did not have an inside track, but I do have the ability to understand that when people have when the votes were counted, that people came in and whatever the pollsters were saying was not accurate for where these, you know, battleground states were. And I think that the questions that we all have an answer is what's going on? What's going on in our country? Is it something even related to the ideas that, well, you know, I want to be an independent person to vote, or I don't feel connected to a party to be able to vote. And I'm not capable of saying why people did what they did, but I would say that we all need to pay attention because voting is really, truly one of the greatest gifts that we have in this democracy. And so in this case, we have a democratic decision that was made by the voters, and we're going to go ahead and continue to govern our city, our state, with as much of the democratic process that we can, and to make sure that people understand that their votes were important and that we heard them.
Vice President Harris and her running mate, Tim Walz, governor of Minnesota, were here several times during this election campaign.
Yes.
I believe I'm correct in saying that you were with the vice president and or Tim Walz at some point during those many visits. I think she was in the state 20 times. I'm not sure how often she was in Charlotte, but you're a Democrat. You have your ear to the ground within the party. Did it feel like she had momentum? Did she or her staff, when they were here, give off a winning vibe?
For my opportunities to interact with the vice president was really clearly that she was trying to make a possible run around the idea of what are some of the guiding principles for the Democratic Party. So when she talked about democracy, when she talked about threats to the ability for people to have equal opportunities. I think that that's what she was trying to do and attempting to do, and it just didn't resonate with some of the people that voted. And that's as far as I go intellectually around how this looked to me. But she was a champion. I think 3 months she had to put together a national campaign. She had to choose a running mate. She had to deal with a person that was already in the White House as a president. So I can see how things can become very, very difficult to put in the right space at the right time. I'm grateful that she came to Charlotte. I think that it showcased our democracy. I think it showcased her willingness to talk about the middle class and all of those things that happened. So it was a great opportunity, as I said, to be with her. It was also a time that I had no idea about the distance. I was really surprised at the distance between the our swing states and what we expected or what the National Democratic Party expected.
Let me ask you this, because you just said that she made the case that democracy was at stake in this election, the future of democracy. President Biden has said something similar. Most left-leaning pundits were shouting at the rafter, at the off the rooftops about the potential threats to democracy posed by Donald Trump. But Donald Trump won handily, and they won the Senate, the Republican Party, and they're really close and probably will take the House. They already have the Supreme Court. So now we have completely unified government headed by a man who was alleged to be a threat to democracy. Do you think he was and is a threat to democracy? And if so, what should Democrats, how should they approach this as a minority party?
I think that the Democratic Party is going to have to take some time to step back and start actually looking what is factual, what is accurate, what do we see as a vision for the future. But I think that that's where we have to start, and I can't answer where we'll end, but I still believe that people care deeply about the environment that they live in, the places that they have, the opportunities that they want to have. And I remember once the vice president saying that she wanted to create an opportunity economy. But those kinds of things didn't really resonate. What does that mean? And so I think in some ways we have to have greater definition, and hopefully that takes place over the next several months and years that we have to do something that would really make people feel a part of what we are doing in our country.
Despite the Democrats' now minority status in national politics, party leaders have said they will be vigilant and working to blunt any efforts by Republicans which they find alarming or dangerous. I'm just curious how. I mean, they will be outnumbered and will have absolutely no power because the Republicans will march in lockstep, as they would have had they won.
Well, I think that's a great question, Mike, one that I think you've already answered, to say that we have to figure out where the parties are going to be, what are the opportunities that we're going to have. In Charlotte, we focused on our ability to have a great city that people want to choose to live in, to give opportunities for economic development, economics for all of our residents. And so as we go forward, I think that part of the good things that happened to us is that we had our bond packages passed 60% plus, that people may have had one opinion about the Republican Party, one opinion about the Democratic Party, but they still believe that municipal government in our state and in our cities especially is that something works really well. And I think that that's what I am going to focus on over the next several weeks.
We live in a Democratic city, essentially. Mostly Democrats live and vote here, and they vote for Democrats. And that's that probably accounts for why council is fundamentally a Democratic city council, and the county commission is a fundamentally democratically composed county commission, but there are municipal elections coming up next year, which we'll talk about later. So I would think that a lot of self-examination needs to go on between now and then locally because of what happened nationally. And Connecticut Democratic Senator Chris Murphy has been pretty vocal about what he thought happened to Democrats in this election. On X, he posted a couple of things. He said, and let me see how much you agree or disagree with what he said. He says, Democrats, quote, are out of touch with the crisis of meaning and purpose fueling the MAGA movement. Do you think he's right?
You know, you're giving me this quote, and this is what I would say about that. I am not going to be able to, like, one second moment say, okay, this is what someone said. What I'm focused on right now is to make sure that we still continue to provide the democracy that we have in our city. And I think you see that through the county commission elections and how those folks were returned as Democrats into the county government and I county commission. And I let's just take a pause here and listen to people long enough to figure out what they're really saying. And I'm not quite sure that I know that we can do that until we convene the right people in the room, the people that have more information around what are we trying to accomplish nationally.
Is the local party, is the state party doing this right now? Are they in this post-mortem mode?
I haven't had an opportunity to speak to anyone or have an opportunity to be in a room where people are beginning to think about this. It's only been, what, a couple of weeks, maybe 2 weeks? Mm-hmm. I'm sure that there will be some opportunities for us, just as we came together to try to win this and to win the state as Democrats. I think we'll come back together to say, how can we do more than what we did during this election?
So Senator Murphy wrote this as well. He said, the American left has never fully grappled with the wreckage of 50 years of neoliberalism, which, by the way, neoliberalism emphasizes free markets, capitalism, a diversion from government ownership, in other words, privatization. If that has caused, if those things have caused this shift in sentiment, how does that impact Charlotte? Are we doing things the right way here, do you think, in terms of dealing with those things, if he's right? Because he says people are feeling alone, impotent, overwhelmed, and that went straight to Democrats making uninspiring solution suggestions.
I know that we are very much aware of things that are happening in our city, the Chetty study, the racial equity initiatives that we're trying to accomplish. All of these things are where people believe in government supporting and helping them be their very best selves. So when we talk about in Charlotte, we have to know that no matter what the party is, whether Republican, Democrat, Independent, unaffiliated, is that we're going to focus on making our environment safe for people to become their very best selves. And that's what I believe that we have to do. You know, we hosted, think about this, the things that we did during the floods in the western part of the state. Think about that concert. I don't know if you went, I didn't have a chance to go, but we've raised over $24 million to support our neighbors to the west. We continuously try to deal with what happened with Helene, which may have impacted some of what happened in the election as well. But people have to have a sense that someone is listening and someone is caring and someone is taking action. And that's what I believe both Mecklenburg County Commission and the Charlotte City Council is doing, individually understanding that we have people that live here that we need to support and provide opportunities for them.
I want to come back to that, because that is what Democrats on city council and Democrats on county commission have been doing now here for years, and they seem to have people in their hands, but we'll talk about whether that's what they want. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at Mazda of South Charlotte. WFAE.com. It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins, Mayor Vial Isles. Charlotte Mayor Vial Isles is with us for the hour, and we'll talk about a bunch of stuff. We are analyzing. We're doing our post-mortem on what happened in this election. And just a moment ago, you said that one of the things that you think government needs to do, and one of the things certainly that we have tried to do, at least you have tried to do it at Charlotte City Council level and a county commission level, is provide support for people so that they can be their best selves. And you referenced what we've done for the folks in the mountains who were disastrously affected by that hurricane. And that seems to be something that crosses bipartisan lines. People expect that help to be delivered by the government in times of crisis. But this election, people voted for a party that prefers and promotes privatization, deregulation of federal agencies and businesses as a result of deregulation, reductions in government spending. That would indicate perhaps that's not what people want in their daily lives, that they just want to be left alone by government. And they don't want to be supporting all these little causes that cities like Charlotte have involved themselves in. How do you read it?
I read it as that, you know, all politics are local. That's the way I read it. And that when we were talking about how Mecklenburg County reacted to this election, it's very different than some of the other states that went through this. So our intent and purpose, our purpose in this is to continue to address the issues that our citizens have. I mean, we certainly hope that the federal government will be in a position to support the things that we believe in and work on, but we still have a common goal, as I've said, with the county, the city, with our business community, the people that all are employed here. We are still trying to make this a city that's livable and safe, and one that people choose to live in. We want our kids to do better. We want all of our opportunities to have good paying jobs. So these are the things that we're doing. And I would believe, and it's not just believe, I really know that Charlotte can be a model for a great city in the South, a city that can do this and achieve this if we all pull together in the same direction, which doesn't make it a party. It makes it about the people.
We may never know precisely why, because voters had, as there were as many reasons voters pulled the lever for Donald Trump as there were people who pulled the lever for Donald Trump. So we may never know all the reasons, but the economy certainly played a role, and the Democrats have been criticized for, although we have the best economy in the world, according to The Economist magazine, we are the envy of the world, it hasn't filtered down, or at least the feeling of a good economy hasn't filtered down to the rank and file, because when you go to the grocery store, that's where the rubber meets the road. And in fact, it was announced today that inflation is up 2.6% on the year, which is higher than they thought it was. The Biden administration has been criticized for that, for not being able to relate what their achievements have been to the average person. Harris was criticized by the media for not doing enough interviews. When Trump did very few interviews and mostly only friendly interviews when he did them, she was criticized for not adequately answering questions when Trump rarely answers questions. And she was also a Black Asian woman. What role do you think that factor played into this?
I think that the vice president knew what she was getting into when it was time to make this decision. She made that choice. And a lot of people across our country that ran for office that did not win, they made the choices that they had. And I do believe that in this universe, that people are more geared towards the media and the commercials and all of the ads that were done. And I can't even imagine how much was spent on this election. I mean, I've heard numbers that are outstandingly more digits than I can count.
It's in the neighborhood of $1 billion or more.
Yeah. And so when we're starting to talk about that, we just have to realize, is that the way that we want to have elections run? Is this now that opportunity to think about it differently? So I think that That's one of the questions that perhaps even the Republicans may ask, because once you have one way, it's done, and you lose. Sometimes you want to know, well, what could I have done differently as well?
But the big money influence in these campaigns, and it comes from both sides, there's no question about that, is partly the result of Supreme Court decisions about corporations being people and Citizens United allowing a free flow of money and influence in these elections. How do you reverse that? If you just want to get back to maybe shorter election cycles or smaller amounts of money being spent and donated, how do you do that?
I don't think we're going to see any change in the Supreme Court decisions. The president-elect chose three significant appointments to our courts, and I just believe that sometimes, Mike, you just have to, deal the, I mean, what is that? Play the hand that you're dealt. And so we're going to have to play the hand that we're dealt, and we're going to figure out how best we can continue to serve others and to continue to be a part of this country with where we are. But I don't think anyone's expecting to see a lot of change in the court system.
So this election brought out record numbers of people for early voting and more voters than normal in the general election overall. Mecklenburg County, however, continues its track record of low voter turnout. I think we had a turnout of 69% of eligible registered voters. Do you have any theory as to why Mecklenburg County, predominantly blue, continually turns its back on democracy?
Well, I can't say that it continuously turns that, but you
Now
look.
we always have low voter turnout in Mecklenburg.
Okay. Well, it depends, on how we have this turnout. In 2020, it was 71%. In 2024, it was 69%. So, we have some numbers to make up, but I don't see that. It's not like it's, a complete loss. I mean, at 71, we're at 569,000. At 69, we're at 578,000. So we need to just continue to work with people and to give them information and hope that they will come out and that they have the opportunity to have their voices heard.
But that means this time around, 31% of the people chose not to vote. They didn't care to vote. They didn't follow politics. Who knows why they didn't vote, but they followed a pattern that Mecklenburg County has set for itself of not really having substantial voter turnout. And Wake County does, and other counties in the state do. So what's different here?
Well, I can't, the thing that we all know is that everyone, and I'm not going to say everyone can vote. There are some people that can't vote because of issues and things like that. But I can't address how people make their final decisions on choosing to be part of the process or not. I do think that sometimes Charlotte is a little bit different. So we actually talk about Charlotte being different than Greensboro and from Raleigh. If I lived in Raleigh and every day I was walking by the state capitol, maybe I'm more more really conscious that I have the opportunity to do these things. I don't know the answer to that, Mike. I'm not so sure that there is an answer to that.
Okay. Well, it wasn't all doom and gloom for Democrats in North Carolina, quite obviously. They took the governor's office, they took the lieutenant governor's office. We have a Democratic attorney general with Jeff Jackson. Other council of state offices are occupied now or will be occupied by Democrats. Mo Green, one superintendent of public instruction. How do you explain the splitting of the ticket? How do you explain voters in North Carolina voting for Republicans at the national level, but Democrats at the local and state level?
I think a lot of that had to do with the media com or shows or links. What do you call them when you have the shows and you count them? But I mean, I think the difference there, and I think this is pretty clear, that Mark Robinson was not helpful for the Republican ticket.
Were Democrats at all responsible for this, or was it just Mark Robbins? In other words, were Democrats sending a different message, selling something different to voters here that they weren't getting nationally?
No, I think it goes to the reference that we just had, 71%, 69% voting. That margin was probably something that was impacted by Mark Robinson, because that way we could have more people saying, I'm going to vote Democratic because of that, because of the Mark Robinson effect.
And one Democrat who lost his race was former Charlotte City Councilman Braxton Winston. He ran for Labor Commissioner. What are your thoughts about his candidacy and his loss?
I had an opportunity to be with Braxton, and he was very introspective. And he said that he had a great plan for getting people to see what his values were, and that no matter what the outcome was going to be, that he was fine with that. And so I think a lot of people need to take that kind of position, and a lot of people are taking that position. You do your very best, you have a plan, you try to raise enough money, and then if it doesn't work, then you have to figure out what's going to be next. And I think Braxton is going to have a great political interests, and people are going to support him in other ways. It was a very slim margin, but one that he understands that that's what happens when you sign on the dotted line to run.
The North Carolina Democratic Party is being led by a young woman, a relative newcomer, Anderson Clayton, who, because of our status as a swing state, got a lot of national exposure on CNN and MSNBC and other networks. Did she do something to encourage people to vote for Democrats that wasn't being done nationally? How would you characterize her leadership and what she did behind the scenes, at least for state candidates in this election?
I can't say that I can do an assessment of Anderson's leadership. She was chosen by the Democrats to be the leader of the party, and she certainly had the opportunity during our co the convention that we had. She did terrific. But when it comes down to you got to get it out and get it done, I am sure that she is thinking about this harder than I would ever be able to talk about for her. And I expect that this is something that the party as an overall effort will be thinking about. And Anderson, if I were Anderson, I'd be thinking about it right now myself.
What do you believe the benefit will be, or will there be a benefit to Charlotte or Mecklenburg County or to this region as a whole, to Josh Stein becoming our next governor, to Rachel Hunt, who is from here, being our next lieutenant governor, and the impact of breaking the supermajority in the legislature? What do you think the benefit will be, and will there be a benefit to our area?
Well, certainly Charlotte plays a large role in the economics of the state. And I think that what we want to make sure is that as we develop relationships with the legislature, that we are keenly aware of our role and support, and that there are things that we have to have as an urban community that we will have in our pockets to say, how do we do this? And how do we do this in collaboration with the state?
We
So
have a
I'm
lot of
looking
things.
forward to those discussions.
Well, we have a lot of things on the table with the state, including the transportation plan and the need for tax dollars to help fund it, all of which I'm assuming will go at some point this year to the legislature for discussion. Does it help that the supermajority has been broken?
I don't think that it matters on the supermajority. I think it matters on whether or not we get it done. So I think that we don't depend on a majority or a supermajority. What we depend on is putting our case forward to make sure that people understand why it's important. I think it's just as important when you talk about things with the legislators is to say, this is what we do to support the state. We want to be a part of what we want to be is that we have to look at how many jobs are created in Mecklenburg, how do we do our economic input, how do we see this happening, and we're a significant part of the state's economy, but we also have to understand that what we do in Charlotte impacts what happens in Anson County, what happens in other parts of our state. And so we what we're when I think about the election and our role in what we're trying to do with the economics of our own city is that we hope to be someplace that we can make sure that we maintain our economic viability, but at the same time, that we share that with other communities, other towns and cities in our state.
Charlotte voters said yes to three bond referenda, one for transportation, one for affordable housing, and one for neighborhood improvements. The bonds total $226 million. And unlike some previous bonds along the same lines, neighborhood improvements, transportation, affordable housing, unlike those bonds, a property tax will likely be part of the equation here, and people knew that when they said yes. So after they passed by wide margins, you tweeted, quote, "Thank you, voters, for supporting our city bonds. Looking forward to the work we're going to do to support our city's growth." So what will the passage of these three bonds do for citizens?
Well, of course, everyone in this community knows what the housing situations are and what we're struggling with. And so I believe that what we've been doing is continuing to support and act with the a housing affordable housing crises that we're in. So that pretty much is kind of something that we've already done. But I think the other thing is that while we are talking about transportation and the red line, those are big initiatives that we're trying to take so that we can actually serve all of the county and even maybe for deeper along or bigger than the county. But right now, what we're doing is transportation is not just the red line. It is about how do we do roads and streets and sidewalks and bridges that we have to have. But I want you to know that it's important that we do some of the smaller things. Sometimes, it's that crack in the sidewalk that needs to be repaired before the sidewalk dives in. And so the neighborhood bonds are all about improving pedestrian and bike paths, drainage, open space, and lighting, things that we need to actually address as just the municipal needs. And so
And will
right
those
now, we
and will
don't
and
expect.
I was, I have 40, 30 seconds. Will those neighborhood bond monies be spent in specific areas that have already been earmarked, or will they be spent all over the city of Charlotte?
So you need to watch the council meetings. We have specific areas that are designated for this for these bonds.
When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about these affordable housing bonds. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is this the fourth housing bond we've said yes to?
Oh,
I
Mike,
think.
it's been a long
Okay,
time.
well,
I
I th I
think I
think
can
I think
remember.
the I think the
Okay.
first two were $50 million. The last one
I
was a
think the
hundred
first
million.
one was actually $25 million. That
Okay.
tells me how old I am, right?
Well, it's
Okay.
around 33. It's around $300 million we've passed so far, and I want to find out what we've done with that money and what we're going to do with this new bunch of money when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. Mike Collins, we're back with Mayor Vi Lyles, Charlotte Mayor, talking about all things Charlotte, all things election, and more as we go through the final parts of this hour. The city bonds passed overwhelmingly by voters, among them the $100 million in affordable housing bonds. That's the latest in a series of bonds earmarked for affordable housing. Over the years, we've said yes to hundreds of millions of dollars of these bonds. What has been the result, Mayor?
Well, the results have been actually something that is helping us keep our heads above water. I want to say for this current year, we have done, or the city, Charlotte City Council has taken a different path forward, but still focus heavily on how do we address housing for people in the community. So what in the past we'd often talk about how do we build or support with housing developers that are making housing affordable, we would often subsidize what they were doing. They would apply, then we'd give them money to go ahead and complete those developments. Now I think that we're looking at it and thinking, do we need to have better segments? So the Charlotte City Council, Luana Mayfield and Victoria Watlington led the committee's effort to a what do we exactly need to, how do we address the $100 million in projects? And if we're doing that, how do we take care of people that are being displaced like we have today often? How do we make sure that people can repair their homes, something that allows them to dip into this money without us losing that person? So we have a matrix of what we want to do, and that's available on our website from our Housing and Safety Committee, because we're trying to make sure that we don't lose people because they can't afford to live where they live now. So displacement efforts, ideas of repairing, there are a number of initiatives that are going to take place that are different and significant. So we have rental housing production, home ownership, preservation, anti-displacement, rehab, all kinds of things that we're actually trying to make sure, as I go back to, what do we need to do for the community? And what we were doing was building, but now we're going to do more than building. We're going to keep people safe where they are.
Are there benchmarks that you have set for determining where you are on the sliding scale of success or failure?
Absolutely. The city council and the city's team, they have put together a die. I can't remember exactly, but if you go to the city's website, you can see what those dimensions or directions are and how the splits are breaking down. So I think that that's something that I don't have in front of me, but something certainly that you can find if you go to Charlotte CLT's website.
Okay. The Panthers traveled to Munich, Germany, to play the New York Giants, and they won.
And they won. Yay!
Coincidentally.
I'm very happy for that. I'm sorry that I didn't go on the trip because I would have been cheerleading all the time for them. I had just a little bit of time to watch them on TV.
That's what we're going to talk about now, because as you mentioned, a majority of city council went along on this trip. Six staff members accompanied them. I think 14 people in all went. The Charlotte Observer asked several times about how much the trip would cost the city and was told last week that the city won't know the exact cost until reimbursement forms have been submitted. And that happens, of course, after the trip. But the city did pay for plane tickets and hotel and meal costs, and they stayed, these folks, at 4 and 5 star hotels that cost, on average, $825 a night. Is that the way we normally do business?
Well, I think that if you're going to go on the trip to Germany and you're going to be a part of a delegation that really actively works with people that are German companies in our own community, and I can tell you that's a major impact. If you've ever come to the Richard Venroot International Award Ceremony, I would say that our German companies always have significant awards given. And I've had the opportunity to tour some of those. And I think that what we are talking about in terms of, well, what is the cost of being in a hotel room? I mean, just even in the country that we live in, it's important to know that we are going to put people in a safe place to live. And it's important to know that it's not just a City of Charlotte trip. It was the Alliance and the North Carolina Economic Development Commission. They're helping us to recruit and encourage people to come here from Germany and be a part of our community as well as a part of our economic development community opportunities.
WCNC TV reported that the total bill for the airplane flights and the hotels alone will be $80,000. Where will that money come from? How many other similar expenses do taxpayers pay for throughout the course of the year?
I can't validate the $80,000, and I do know that we will have a report, as you said, after everybody turns in their, it's just government sometimes is just like a business. You go on a trip, you have to put down all your receipts, you have to submit them to the finance department, and then they have to give you a reimbursement. So we'll know more as soon as that process is done.
But 14 people went from council and staff. 14 people. Was it necessary for 14 people to go to have conversations with German companies and encourage German investment in Charlotte and bring more business here? Does it require 14 people? Maybe it does. I'm just asking.
Well, no, I'll have to tell you once I was had an opportunity to go to Europe, and it was a really an interesting. I was walking across the street and I saw Rick Elias, and he was going to the same meeting that I was going to. So yes, it is something that we need to have people understand, work through, be a part of. This is the way we are a major city, and we have people that have the opportunity to showcase. I have had, Ed Driggs and I were in the meeting room just about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and we had the entire Bavarian Council with us. We are a city that's in an international position, and I think that every one of the council members are making it possible for us to do more and to be able to actually interact with what we have. And so if you saw what the itinerary was, and it was a trip that was full of opportunities and full of things that they were accomplishing. So I think that that is what's really important.
Why didn't you go? Why
Why
didn't
didn't I
you go?
go? You know, Mike, sometimes my life doesn't have to be broadcast across a radio station. There are reasons that I
So, all
have
right, you had a
to
person,
do
you
things.
had a personal, that's all we need to know. You had a personal reason not to go. That does not indicate that you were against the trip. That's the point of the question.
No, I was not against the trip. Just sometimes.
A city spokesperson told the Observer that the trip was thought of as a, quote, economic development opportunity that will elevate the Charlotte brand internationally. Isn't that why we pump all this money into professional sports teams? And the Panthers, after all, were in Munich promoting the brand.
And that's exactly the way it ought to work. They promote the brand. We talk to the people that actually see it and see a part of what we're doing. And I just think that that was the, I think this trip was a good trip for the city of Charlotte, a good trip for the people who currently think about Siemens. Siemens is one of our largest employers in this county. They are a German company. They've just started working on healthcare. Things like these, they don't happen just because somebody's sitting around and saying, okay, let's do this. These are important parts of the integration of our city with opportunities abroad. And I don't think that we ever should do anything more than actually continue to focus on how we can have international companies be a part of our success.
You, along with the city council, voted in closed session a couple of weeks ago to end the employment of city attorney Patrick Baker. He's been the city attorney since 2019. Why?
Well, let me say first of all that I can't comment on that because of state law. There's a general statute in our state that's statewide that protects confidentiality of state employee personnel records, which includes the people that work for our government. And so we have acts that say that this is confidential, and until that confidentiality, we're not going to abuse it. We're just
So
not.
here's what
It,
we
I
know.
understand that some people may think that's okay, but for me, I've been in government long enough to respect the law.
Well, here's what we know. WFAE had requested the a copy of the draft legislation for a proposed transit authority, coupled with a new 1 cent sales tax that was going to go to the legislature. It's a public record. The city refused to release those documents after weeks of delay, and then Mr. Baker sent us a copy of that bill in order to comply with the state's open records law. You said that you believe in complying with the law. That is the law. Is there
Well,
a
the law
connection?
is not to release information that was confidential to a discussion. And that's what I was saying. I will not do that. And that's what you're asking me to do, to say something about something that's confidential, and I'm
No,
not going to do it
I'm
either.
asking you if that was if there's a connection between the release of that document.
I cannot address any connection that you're discussing with me without having some concerns about our personnel acts and what we're doing. I'm just not going to do it.
So public records are just that, public. But it often takes an inordinate amount of time, evidently, for the city and other municipalities around this state to release those records and to be in compliance with state law. Some requests go unfilled for 5 years or more. Why? What is what takes so long?
Well, I think a lot of times that the ones that I see are often not really succinct enough to figure out what we're really trying to give as information. But I do think that this idea of how this works is something that we are not quite able to actually think about. We're committed to trying to do these public records as promptly as possible. I mean, the volumes sometimes are, okay, what I would say, really, like anybody could just call and say, I want this. And the media is not segregated into a different box. Because if the neighborhood person calls and says, I want this, it's in a queue just like anybody else. So we are really working hard in terms of how we can do this. But I do believe and that some of this discussion will help us look at it differently. And I believe council will have some ideas around how do we do this? Because, you know, sometimes they're acknowledged, sometimes you get them within 24 hours, but sometimes you don't get them for a long, long time because of the complexity of the way that you address it. And it's really hard to say to someone, here, take this back and rewrite it so that we can get it faster to you. It's not happening.
Well,
so
I mean,
maybe there's some things that we can do differently.
If it's a public record, why can't you just put it on a website and let people read it? It's a public record. Why does it have to be edited?
Okay, let's just say I call Mike Collins and Mike, I want to know how many times you opened the door for the last 5 or 6 years. And someone has to find that out for us to make sure. So we put it all, we put all of these things on our website, but they're, just imagine how we have to deal with this. And let's just say that we are working as hard as we can. We have departments that actually can do something quicker about it, but some of these are complex. And we can't call you and say, well, can we take the complexity out of your request so that we can get it to you faster? That doesn't work.
The city of Charlotte settled a lawsuit this week resulting from a deadly police shooting in 2017. Back then, a CMPD officer shot and killed Ruben Galindo Chavez after Mr. Chavez called 911 saying he had a gun and wanted to turn himself in. And when police arrived, they asked him to drop his weapon. And when he refused to follow that command, police shot him several times. Here's the sticky wicket. He was a Spanish speaker, and the officers on scene were not necessarily fluent in Spanish. And at the time, CMPD Chief Kerputney blamed the shooting on a communication barrier. Now, just days before the trial, the city has agreed to pay $700,000 to settle the suit. This happened in 2017 when there were very few bilingual officers on the force. Has that changed since then? Have police policies changed since then? Will they now, in light of having to pay out $700,000?
Well, one, I want to say to the family that received that money that we acknowledge and understand that that's not enough for the loss of your loved one. But we also wanted to do what was right. And so the results, I think, are appropriate. But I also know that since the 2017, we evolved. And I know that when we do have now, our entire system has additional focus on how do we address people when they're calling in with different and I guess ways that they would speak towards our 911. And yes, we have addressed that issue.
Late last month, City Council on a 5-2 vote decided to lease a gravel lot next to Spectrum Center to the Hornets for $10 a year for 99 years. And the team will build a practice facility on that lot. But that sweet deal gets even sweeter because the finished product will give the city access to 125 parking spaces in a parking structure they're going to build. And they will pay the team $150,000 a year for that. I have 1 minute. Tell me why that makes sense.
You have 1 minute, Mike? I think that if you look at what we're trying to do along with the Spectrum Arena, when you start thinking about the transportation center and the safety that we want to have around it, I think there's a lot to be said when we're talking about building a great city, that what we have at this area is our sports community, a part of our investment in sports, and I think that that's why it makes sense.
So the tent is it's a good trade. $10 a year for 99 years for the land, and we pay them $150,000 a year. That's a good trade.
I think the trade is what happens that we as we develop and continue to development along the where the stadium is.
Okay. Mayor Vi Lyles with us for the hour, talking about many different things. I still have some things to talk about if you want to stick around, but we're out of time. We can't do it. Thank you very much for joining us.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.